Today's shiur, the subject of the shiur is, I thought, relevant to the beginning of a new academic year. New students come to a yeshiva, and the question that we're going to look at is, what is the impact of those new students on the ongoing flow, structure, hierarchy of the yeshiva itself, and how does the yeshiva cope with that change? That's the overall theme. The context of the Gemara, this is Yevamos Kuf Hei Amud Beis. The context of the Gemara is a machlokas in Maseches Yevamos about whether a ketana can be choletzes. Can a ketana do chalitza? So machlokas tanaim, the Gemara wants to ascertain who holds that a ketana can be choletzes. So that's the halachic context of the Gemara. And our part of the Gemara cites our Agadita, our story, to demonstrate who the Man D'Yomer is who maintains that a ketana can be choletzes. So that's the context. The story begins as follows, and it begins, there are actually three halachic frames to this Agadita, although it's an Agadita, but there are three halachic frames. First is the one I just mentioned to you. The second one is what happens when the Agadita, the machlokas that takes place when the Agadita commences, which is not the story, it's about, at least directly, the tension I mentioned earlier, but it's what happened. Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon Barabi, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, everybody have it? Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe, Shimon the son of Rebbe, Hava Yosve, they were sitting. Okay, so they were sitting. Need more text? Here they are. They were sitting, waiting for the shiur to begin. Has this ever happened to you when, A, you got to shiur early, and B, either the Rebbe hadn't arrived or the shiur hadn't begun, so you're sitting around and schmoozing? So, some guys might be talking about how the Mets are doing, or what's going on with the Giants, or whatever. But, not surprisingly, that's not what Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon Rebbe were discussing. They were discussing very interesting subject. Pasachad minaya. One of them began and said, "V'amar hamispalel tzarech sheyitein enav lamata." When somebody davens, he should cast his eyes downward. Shenemar, as it says, "V'hayu enai v'libi sham kol hayam." My eyes and heart should be there all the days. V'chad amar, and the other one said, "Ein av lamala." His eyes should be facing upwards when he davens. Shenemar nisa levavenu el kapayim. This is exactly how these psukim prove the point. Is not what I want to discuss right now, but in any case, there is this machlokas between the two of them. Adahachi asa Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yosi legabayim. As they were discussing this, Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yosi came to them. He's the new Talmud. And he said to them, "Amar lehu b'maya askisa." What are you learning? "Amrulei b'tfila." We're discussing tfila. "Amar lehu," he said to them, "kach amar Abba." This is what Abba said, his father, meaning Rabbi Yosi. "Hamispalo tsarach shiiten einav lamata v'libo lamayla." So when somebody davens, his eyes should be facing downward, but his heart should be elevated l'shamayim. "Kedei shiyiskayim v'shnei mekraos halol." So that these two psukim can be sustained in harmony. Thus ends the first unit or component of this somewhat long agadita. So who are Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon Barabi? But we're in the Beis Medrash of Yehuda HaNasi. Rav Shimon Barebi, another name for Rav Yehuda HaNasi is Rebbe. So Rav Shimon is Rav Yehuda HaNasi's son. Rav Chiya is
Talmud of Rebbe?
Yes, exactly correct. Famously author of
Tosefta,
the great Tosefta. He was one of the prime, most eminent Talmidim of Rav Yehuda HaNasi. So you have a machlokus between Rav Yehuda HaNasi's son and his top, or one of his top Talmidim. So that gives the whole introduction to this story, this Agadot, a significant weight, gravitas. And now this new person comes. As we'll see, he's never come to the Beis Medrash or Rav Yehuda HaNasi, and he's the new person. So he implicates himself in a machlokus. Okay, that's, you know, is that if you're a new guy in the base and the top two Talmidim are debating, is that what you want to do? Not necessarily. But what does he do? He does something quite brilliant. Yes, he reconciles the two. You are right, and you are right. What a wonderful way to enter the Beis Medrash. The two top Talmidim are arguing, and this new Talmud comes and says, I can prove you both right. And how does he prove it, or how does he demonstrate it? What's his evidence? His father. His father was a renowned Tana. So he comes in by, you might say, subtly asserting his identity. This is my father said, and everybody knows Rav Yossi, a great, great Tana Rav Yossi. So he comes in a very clever, subtle way. In other words, he introduces his position, but it's a compromised position which integrates the positions of the two great Talmidim of Rebbe, and he also subtly indicates, like, I'm not a nobody, you know, my father's Rav Yossi. It's a very peaceable beginning to this Agadata about this new Talmud, or Shimon Rav Yossi, who comes into the Beis Medrash. There's harmony. What I want to ask you about is, what's the machlokas? What's this old issue with where you're supposed to be looking? And this, by the way, is a good Elul topic, since we're getting into Rosh Hashanah and davening and preparing for the Yom Narayim. What is this machlokas about where you're supposed to look? So let's look at Rashi. That's always a good place to begin. Ein of Lamata Klape Eretz Yisrael. You see where it's underlined? Vishum Deshchina Hasam. So Rashi's understanding of the Gemara is that the reason you look down is so that you look down at Eretz Yisrael. Machlokas is, do you look at Eretz Yisrael where the Shechina is, or do you look up Lamaila? What's the problem with Rashi Shita? Exactly, not everybody's in Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi Shita is, I think, a little bit shver, it's a little bit problematic. I mean, that's a Shita, but Rabbeinu Yonah also has a similar view. You're not in Eretz Yisrael. You look down, you're looking down at Queens. You're not looking down at 6,000 miles away. So it's a little hard. Now, of course, they were in Eretz Yisrael at the time, so it makes more sense contextually. But this is not only Machlok is presumably about those who are Mispal in Eretz Yisrael. Presumably it's about those of us who are davening in Queens. So Rashi Shita is a little hard to understand. Yes?
We're supposed to be facing towards Eretz Yisrael when we daven, though. That's what I'm going to know.
So correct, absolutely.
The idea is that no matter where you are, you should have in mind that you're thinking of Eretz Yisrael, which is like Hashem's place in this world.
That's true. I agree with what you're saying, but that's not... Yeah, just to repeat, you're supposed to be looking down and thinking about Eretz Yisrael, but then I think the Shita should have been, look at Eretz Yisrael, not look down. Looking down is a very, very topographical location. You're looking down. Would you look down. Look down right now. The Gemara says, look down. Are you looking at Eretz Yisrael, or are you looking down at your feet? So,
Eretz Yisrael is symbolic to God's place in this world.
I hear, but I just think Rashi is a little shver. There are other explanations, which I can't say I'm totally happy with, as well. The Anaf Yosef in his parish to the En Yaakov says that Hashkachas Hashem is Lamata. So you're looking. The question is, where is Hashem attending to? Is he attending to what's going on Lamata? Is he attending to what's going on Lamaila? Dion Yaakov says that the question is totally in Machlok, it's where the Ikra Shechina is. The Ikra Shechina, Lamaila or Lamata? I'd like to share with you another explanation which works for me. You can agree with it or disagree with it. It works for me because it works for me as a mispalel. And it flows from many other themes in tefillah. And I will also argue that this interpretation of the machlokas renders this machlokas an introduction to what happens later. That these are just not totally disparate, separate issues, the story that unfolds, and this machlokas, but the machlokas is a prologue to the issues that unfold. So, when you daven, are you thinking of yourself as a malach Hashem tzavakos, as somebody who is trying to elevate himself up to Shemayim? Or are you a nothing? Are you a ben adam, like a behema? What's the difference between animals and human beings? We all die, we're all born, we're all subject to tivus. You know, what are we really worth as human beings? There are two dimensions to our humanity. There is the animalistic dimension to us, which renders us, if we think about it, who are we to daven to Hashem? Hashem is a lamaila, lamaila, lamaila. A plain human being. How can I daven to Hashem? You look down at the ground with all drastic, radical humility, and you can't even imagine yourself as being ready to be nichnas into a relationship with a Kadosh Baruch. Should that be your gisha? Should that be your approach to Hashem, that you're a nothing? And you, with radical humility, you look down at the ground, and what am I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm so dependent upon you. I am nothing. I'm not worthy of anything. Whatever you give me is something that you give me, and it's a bracha, and I'm not worthy of anything. Or should we think of ourselves as we have a neshama? We can talk to Hashem. Hashem created us, but selam lokim. He enabled us to daven. Dogs can't daven. We can. You might say it's a Nevardika approach versus a Slabutka approach to our relationship with Hashem. Are we nothing, nothing, nothing? And in that context, we struggle to get whatever bracha we can from Hashem. Or are we Bnei Adam, Slabutka? We created B'Tzelem Elokim. We approach Hashem with our eyes L'mayim. So that, to me, is a way of thinking about the machlokas between these two Tanayim that resonates with me when I daven. Who am I when I daven? Am I nothing? Or am I somebody who can daven to Hashem? Okay, in any case, that's one way of reading it. I think, does it work to you? I mean, do you hear the machlokas? Yes? That's a separate, I mentioned, maybe you missed that. How their shittas fit into the psukim is another question. And it's a good question, but I just don't want to get into it right now. It's a good question. It doesn't affect my pshat. It's just in general, how do they get it? Now, by the way, this issue of who we are as Mispalim is one of the great themes of tefillah. If you look through the tefillah of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, my afar kecheres hanishbar kechalom yo'af, or I, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'nei Elokim, avinu malkeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our father. You know, these are tensions in how we approach Hashem, and these are deep themes in tefillah. In any case, that's the background. Now the rest of the story and the heart of the Agadah unfolds. Adahacha, excuse me. Adahachi asa Rebbe l'mesifta. While they're having this machlokas, this debate, this whole discussion, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi comes to the yeshiva. Inhu dahavu klile yesivu biduchtayu. They who were light went immediately and comfortably to sit in their places. Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi, agav yukre, because he was very heavy, it took him quite a while to get settled. So everybody's already seated, you know, around, and everybody, by the way, everybody had a mokum kabua. Your place in the hierarchy of the yeshiva was determined by where you sat, most literally. You know, your level of learning was marked by where you sat, front row, back row, where you sat. It was a very hierarchical model. So everybody sat down, and Rabbi Yossi, Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi, was very, very heavy took a long time to get into a seat, and everybody else is seated, so what is he going to have to do? He's going to, you know, you get into a crowded room, you got to strip yourself and go around and step over people to get to your seat. He's a new guy in the yeshiva. Like, you know, he's nobody knows him. Now, he was very heavy. He wasn't just like a little heavy. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says, Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, that when Rishmo Bar Yossi and his friend of his, Chaver, I guess another Tana, were standing face to face, you could drive two cows underneath them, underneath their stomach. Do you take that literally? I hope you don't. I don't think it's intended to be literally. It's a, you know, can you imagine how fat they must have been, and also how tall, to get a tzemed shel bakar, a pair of cows underneath them? So they couldn't have been that fat, and they couldn't have been that tall to literally have a tzemed shel bakar underneath. This is the Gemara's way of forcefully and graphically expressing just how heavy they were. And he was very, very heavy. Now, I don't know if he was heavy because he had a glandular problem, or, you know, I don't really know what the reason. He ate a lot. I don't really know. It doesn't say. But he was very, very heavy. And he was, in our contemporary 21st century jargon, we would say he had a disability. He was very, very, you know, he was disabled in some respect by his weight. In any case, it took him a while to get in. Now, obviously, it didn't affect his learning or anything like that. Ambale Avda. So now, one of Rebbe's Talmidim, who's in some ways who's perhaps the central figure in the whole Haggadah, he appears for the first time. His name is Avdan. Amalei Avdan. Avdan said to him, Mihu zeh shemifsal rashe am kadosh. Who is this newbie? Who is this new person who is stepping all over the holy Jews who are sitting and learning in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi? You're not allowed to step over people. It's disrespectful. Who are you to go stepping all over people? Why is he the one who speaks up, Avdan? So that's one answer to the question, which I will share with you right now because it's important, is he was a bit of a gabbai to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. As we'll see later in the story, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi sends him to like a gabbai, to find out certain things, to ascertain certain facts. So he's like, you might say, an assistant, probably very competent, a gabbai of a great Rosh Yeshiva or a Rebbe. I think in Hasidic circles, great Rebbe, you know, the gabbai is the one who gets stuff done. These are very, very, usually very, very competent people. And Avdon was probably a very competent person. He was a Talmud of Rebbe, so obviously he was a Talmud Chacham, right? But if you think about yeshiva and you think about learning, so it's not usually the case, there are exceptions, obviously, it's not usually the case that the very best Talmidim in learning are the Gabbayim. Why not? I think you'd have Gabbayim or great Talmidim, but the very, very best is not, it happens sometimes, but it's not common. Why not? Yeah, a gabbai has to do stuff. He's busy running around, taking care of things and arranging things, which is very important. I'm not knocking that one iota. It's very, very important. But I know in my years in yeshiva, the people who were the askanei hatzibur, the guys, you know, who did stuff for the yeshiva, they were not the one or two or three top guys. They may have been very, very good guys, and I'm not casting aspersions on anybody. We have a president of student government. Top guy, great guy, wonderful. I'm not casting any aspersions. But usually the top guys are the guys who never leave the base. They're there from, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning until, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, they're totally shakua and learning. And I really, again, I don't mean this to be a knock on anybody. And Avdan was a very accomplished person. If he wanted a smart guy and a learned person, Rebbe would not have used him as his assistant or as his gaba. So it's not to knock. But it's just to indicate that Avdan had a certain place in the social structure of the Beis Medrash. He was an important person. He was Rebbe Shamus. He was no doubt competent, smart, and he learned. He was in the yeshiva. So he was a Talmud. He was a Talmud of Rebbe. So Avdan speaks up very, very sharply to Rebbe Shmuel Bar Yossi. Very sharply. So let's look at the dialogue and then come back and analyze it. Amarle. So what does Yishmael Reb Yossi say? Ani Yishmael Reb Yossi. Does he say Ani Rebbe Yishmael Reb Yossi? Ani Yishmael Reb Yossi. I'm a plain Jew. My name is Yishmael. Anybody know? You know anybody today whose name is Yishmael? It's kind of a name that sort of went out of fashion in Jewish life. But in any case, Ani Yishmael Reb Yossi, his father's Reb Yossi, says Reb Yossi. Shabasi Lilmo Torah Me Rebbe. I came to learn Torah from Rebbe. It's a very, at one level, very self-effacing response. Me who's there, who is this new person stepping all over everybody? Yishmael. I want to learn Torah. He was probably older than Rebbe at the time, according to some of Farshim. And it's a sign of his own yearning and bakasha for Torah that he went to learn in the yeshiva of Rebbe, even though he was Rebbe's senior. And obviously, as we saw before, and as the Agadot unfolds, he was a real Talmid Chacham. He was a major Talmid Chacham, a Tana. It's quoted in Shas. And nevertheless, he's coming, and he's small, I'm coming to him, I'm a regular Talmud, I just want to learn Torah from Rebbe. Okay. Let's continue. After we finish the dialogue, we'll take a break and analyze, and then continue. Amalei. V'chi ata hagun luma Torah me Rebbe? Are your SATs high enough? Like, I mean, what makes you fitting to be a Talmud of Rebbe? It's a very sharp response to a new Talmud in the Beis Medrash. Like, instead of smiling and welcoming him and opening up a tea room and giving him, you know, eternal coffee and cake and Mendy having Mendy take care of him, it's like, who are you to be here? What are you doing here? Are you hugging? So look at his answer. Amalei, v'chi Moshe haya hugging luma Torah mipi ha'gvura? Was Moshe Rabbeinu a good enough Talmud to learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? A pretty sharp response. Amalei Avdin says to him, v'chi Moshe ata? What are you, Moshe Rabbeinu? So Yishmael answers, Amalei, v'chi Rabbeinu Elokim hu? Well, I mean, your Rebbe is great, but I mean, is Yakarish Baruch? So, thus ends this quarrel, which is the title of the Shir, Quarrel in the Beis Medrash. The story continues at some length, but there's the quarrel between the two of them. So, there are a number of, you know, I think pretty interesting points to raise about this. First of all, Avdon, the name. Have you met anybody else with the name of Avdon? No. Nope. What's that?
Avidan.
Okay. So Taisvis says, look at Taisvis, underlined on the side. Abba Yudin B'Yerushalmi. His real name was Abba Yudin, Yuda. But for Avdon Lishna Klila, this is a nickname. Negative nickname, which probably accrued to him afterwards. Why is it negative?
Destruction.
Yeah, right. I mean, clearly the author of this Agadita was not a fan of him because he called him Avdon instead of Abba Yudin. And the reason he wasn't a fan of him is kind of obvious. Look at how harsh he is to this new person in the Beis Medrash. Yes. Excuse me?
Klila.
Yes, Klila means curse. Yeah, I think so. I think it's like a lashon of cursing. So it's interesting that how would you characterize on the scale of anava gaiva, humility, arrogance, how would you characterize Avdon?
Well, it's not for his own kavod necessarily. It sounds like it's like the kavod of his rebbe that he's put on.
Okay, then he's saying it's not for his own kavod, but it's for the kavod of his rebbe.
But still, is saying, I'm fitting to be here, and you're not.
And I am the Rebbe's Gabbai. I'm the man. And who are you to come into this Beis Medrash? Right, so at one level, he's defending his Rebbe's honor to covet a Rebbe, but in so doing, who is he? He's saying, well, you know, you're not me. I'm his Gabbai. I'm in the yeshiva. You're some new guy. Like, get out of here. And you're stepping over everybody? You know, you fat guy, what are you stepping over everybody for? which is a very harsh thing. So on the one hand, I think there's a certain arrogance in Avdon's attitude towards this new Talmud. How would you characterize Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand?
Humble.
I'm fairly modest, right? And Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yossi doesn't say, I'm Rabbi Yishmael. He doesn't say, I just want to learn Torah. I came to the yeshiva because I wanted to learn. Rabbi Sachs is a great Rosh Yeshiva. Here he gives terrific shiur, and I want to go to a shiur, or Rabbi, whoever. I want to learn Torah. So that's a very self-effacing kind of what's interesting. Avdon is arrogant. He accuses Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi of arrogance and being posei al Rosh Ha'am, right? That's arrogance, just stepping all over everybody. Yes, right. Well, very, very good. We'll come to that in just a second. So Avdon, who is arrogant, accuses Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi of arrogance. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, seems pretty modest and self-effacing. And as a further irony, what is the Mishnah so to say? Mishemes Rebbe? Anybody remember? Batla Anava, very good. Rebbe was a paragon of modesty. So look at the complex ironies of this whole debate. Avdon, the arrogant person, accuses the modest person of being arrogant and of arrogantly wanting to learn under the from the Rebbe, who is a master of Anava. It's very, very confusing. So, to get to Mendy's point, why does Avdon take Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, of all people, why Avdon does he take Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi to be arrogant? Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi seemed to be pretty self-effacing on the face of it. So, Mendy is mentioning something that I think is very astute, projection. Famous Rashi, if you're suffering something, don't tell your friend. We tend to see our own flaws in others. And Avdon, who was arrogant, sensed arrogance under every nook and cranny because he himself was arrogant, knew he shouldn't be arrogant, and so he's worried about arrogance and therefore sees it everywhere. People who have a certain weakness psychologically, they often see that weakness all over the place, because they're struggling with that weakness themselves. And so Avdon, who was the master of arrogance, saw arrogance everywhere. Now, what's interesting is, it's true to say Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi is modest, but he's not really all that self-effacing. What is he, when he's attacked, how does he respond?
Sharp.
Yes, his repartee is as sharp as Avdon. So he's you can't step all over him, right? So there's an interest. He's a big guy. You're right. So what's interesting is that you see that humility, to be modest, doesn't mean you have to be a schlepper. A modest person can be strong in asserting what it is that he, in all due modesty, feels he deserves. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi had very considerable self-respect. We saw that he quotes his father earlier, he quotes his father later. He knows who he is. But he has a larger picture. I know who I am, I know my worth, I learned a lot of Torah from my father, but I still have a lot of Torah to learn. I want to learn from you, Don Nasi. Don't shove me around. I may not be Ryuda Nasi, may not be my father, but I am who I am. In all modesty, don't shove me around. So what you have here is something really interesting. We put Avdon on the arrogant side of the scale. We put Ryuda Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yossi more on the humble side. But appropriate self-regard for a modest person may not be radically different from the inappropriate self-regard of the arrogant person. They're clashing, the two of them, right? They're tête-à-tête, they're head-to-head, right? I'm modest, he's arrogant. I have to stand up for myself, you're standing up for yourself, and we clash. And the differences between arrogance and true, legitimate modesty with appropriate self-regard can be subtle. And that's, I think, part of the clash between the two of them. What is it to be a modest person? Must a modest person get stepped all over?
Yeah.
Not necessarily for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yossi. Now we'll see what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's role in all this in just a second. Yes. Who, Rishwad Rielsi?
Yeah.
It's possible. That's possible. It's not the way I was reading it, but it's a possible reading. Okay. Now, a couple of things that I want to add to this. First of all, Avdan is very, very solicitous of the structure and order of the Beis Medrash. You don't step, you sit down, you're here, you're there. I think Avdan may have been... worried about, excuse me, I've got this stuck throat. Avdan may have been worried about the impact of this newcomer onto the Beis Medrash. Big guy, okay. Son of Rabbi Yossi, major father, Rosh Hashiva, Talmud Chacham. Is he going to usurp my role? The folks in power sometimes are very suspicious and worried about the newcomers. Maybe they'll have more talent than me. Maybe I'll lose my job as Gabbai. Maybe I won't be the best Talmud of my Rebbe. Maybe somebody else will take over. Whenever you have a stable social structure into which newcomers arrive, those newcomers can destabilize the social order and structure of that group. Let's say in the yeshiva, there's a guy who's a fabulous singer. Everybody loves to hear him daven, his beautiful voice. And comes, 85 new guys. Maybe somebody there has a nicer voice than he does and daven more beautifully. Is he going to lose his role as everybody's favorite Baal Tefillah? Avdan, competent, capable guy, but maybe not a world-class Talmud Chacham. Maybe in this new Talmud, in the new cohort of Talmidim, there'll be a really competent guy who's bigger Talmud Chacham than I. So Avdan is worried about his place in the Beis Medrash. And he's threatened by Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Yossi, who was a newcomer. And that is destabilizing. And whenever you have a yeshiva with a new Talmidim coming in, which is one of the themes of my talk this morning, things get shaken up, and there are quarrels, and there's tension until the order re-stabilizes again. It's like the beginning of the semester. Things are like, you're Mokom, you're my Mokom, you're Mokom, it was my Chavrusa, your Chavrusa, who's here? Everything takes a little while to things to kind of settle in. So we're in a moment of instability. Yes?
I'm just wondering where you see that in this Gemara from what Rabbi Yehuda is saying.
Avdan is saying?
Yeah. Okay.
What are you
saying?
Oh, I'm just hypothesizing. Why is he so worried? Why is he the one who, of all people, why is he the one who objects so strongly? So I'm just hypothesizing an explanation. There's no direct evidence. The only thing we know from the text is that Avdan was, more than anybody else in the Beis Medrash, angry or upset at Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi. So that leads me to question why, and so I am posing an answer. That's all there is. Yes.
So, we decided Avdan wasn't the top student, right?
I would decide. It's probable that he wasn't the very, very best, because the Gabayim, the very best guy never did anything but learn.
Right? So I think it's less improbable he was worried that Rabbi Shmuel would take over his role, because he would either be the best or he'd just be a student. Like, for him to be that specific Gabay, I don't hear it as much.
I'm sure I don't understand what you're saying. Would you repeat that?
Avdan's not a top student, right?
Right.
So what's he worried about?
Probably.
Well,
what is he worried about? Yeah, maybe Rishmal Reb Yossi will become a new power base in the yeshiva in various ways, and he felt threatened by that.
So it's kind of general. It's not that he'd be replaced specifically.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know who this new person is, and he feels threatened. He doesn't know anything about it, other than that he's very, very heavy, and he knows who his father is, presumably, when he announces his father. He may have heard a little about his clever means of adjudicating between two of the machlokas earlier. He may have seen this guy's a really aside from the Torah truth of what he's teaching, it's a very politically astute thing to do. When a new person comes in and he sees the two most important people in the yeshiva arguing, he says, "Ah, you're both right, and I can prove it." That's pretty politically astute. So you may have sensed in Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi some kind of a threat. I don't know this is the case. These are just my way of trying to explain why this happened. Yes?
How do you know he just didn't get stepped on like himself?
Excuse me?
I mean, doesn't it say that Rabbi Yishmael's, he was like stepping on people? So how do you know like Avdin was like the guy that just got stepped on, so he was the one who spoke up?
It doesn't say that Avdin was stepped on. He says, he didn't say he was stepping on me. He says, in general, he was stepping on people. I don't know if he was one of those who was stepped on. Yes, Mendy?
It's not necessarily that he was the most, you know, annoyed more than anyone else. Just that it sounds like he, if he's the guy, it seems like if there's something, the problem, he's the guy that's supposed to step up, even if he wasn't the most bothered. So it's not
okay, that's a very good point, Mendy. Many say maybe he spoke up because of his role as Gabbai, and the answer to that question is that I don't think there was an official Gabbai or president of the student government position in the Rebbe's base medrash. I mean, in other words, he was a de facto, as we'll see. I don't even, all we know is that Rebbe Yehuda Anasi sent him on a mission later in the story. Which I am calling it Gabbai. I don't know if there's anything official by his position.
Even in cells, like, even if he's the guy who takes on the role to speak, it could be in his projection, but not necessarily that he's that he was the most bothered by it. So, like, I think it's just his
could be.
Position.
It could be. He doesn't have a position officially, but again, you've seen part of the Agada. The story continues to unfold. Part of what it's saying is emerges from the whole story, but these are just my attempts to understand why this has happened. Yes?
Just I wanted to mention earlier a couple of indicators that there is actually the underlying theme that you're saying of humility. One obvious one, I'm sure most people thought of it, is the discussion about the davening, especially the way you explained it, of the godless Adam versus shiftless Adam. And he seems to have a perfect balance between the two opinions and in life, just having a self-esteem but not being a Baal Gaiva, saying that, I don't know, I'm assuming that he doesn't call himself Rebbe. I don't know when most tonight or Amorim call himself Rebbe, but he says, like, I heard this from Abba. Like, it's not my own finish. I heard from Abba. I know that I'm a son of Rebbe Yossi, but like, so that's Kosher, but I know who I am, that I can speak up, but I'm quoting it b'shame Abba. But also it may be more of a remez to it. But when Avdon accuses Rabbi Yishmael or Yossi of thinking he's Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu is not
exactly.
So is only called Adam. So exactly. when he says, "Oh, are you Moshe Rabbeinu? Are you so humble?"
Exactly. Yeah, that you're absolutely right in making a couple of very very good points. It's brilliant. The reference to Moshe Rabbeinu is brilliant. So on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu is Anu Mikol Adam. On the other hand, he could stand up for what he believed. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, got very angry with the Chet Egel, and many other times, you know, to be a great Anav is not necessarily to be so self-effacing that you're a doormat. And Moshe Rabbeinu, in effect, models, in some ways, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi's behavior. Anava, but nevertheless, you can't wipe the floor with Moshe Rabbeinu Chas V'Shalom or with Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi. Yeah, we know who we are, we do what we do, and we have certain convictions. And that's really what this, and you're absolutely right. That's exactly why I said that my understanding of the Machlokas about Tefillah renders it a perfect prologue to this whole issue of arrogance and humility. It's exactly one of the reasons why I think that my pshat may be a good one, because of that. It makes the whole Agadah a single thematic unity. Yes.
Yeah, I would add also that Rishmael doesn't even claim to deserve to be there. He just says, I want to learn. And just as much as nobody is really worthy to hear Torah from the Gura, so he's saying the same thing about himself. And it's when Avdon turns around and says, oh, you think of Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, no, you're missing the point. I'm saying that compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing can compare.
Right. Okay,
and
very good.
He's taken it down.
Good. Excellent. Okay, let's continue. So, Amar of Yosef. Everybody have it? Amar of Yosef? What is Rav Yosef doing here chronologically? Rav Yosef is a Tana or an Amora? An Amora. Rav Chiya, Rishmal, Rabbi Yehuda, Nasir, all Tanaim. So obviously, Rav Yosef was not a party to this whole conversation. Rav Yosef is a later interpolation by the Gemara. Rav Yosef made a comment on what was going on. There's a whole discussion. The Gemara sticks Rav Yosef's comment in, and then the discussion continues. So it goes back to it. So this is a kind of like a little commentary that the Gemara puts into what was going on amongst the Tanaim. Amar Rav Yosef, Shakle Rebbe Limitarfise. Dik Amar Le Rabach Velo Amar Rebbe. Notice Rav Yishmael, when he says, was Moshe Rabbeinu, is Rebbe, Moshe is Rebbe HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He doesn't say Rebbe, he says Rabacha, your Rebbe. Why didn't he say my Rebbe? He came to learn Torah with him. So Rav Yosef's comment is, as Rashi says, is that Rav Yosef is saying Rebbe got his comeuppance. Here, his Talmidim are acutely debating, very sharp debate, quarrel. This is not machlokas about Torah. This is a quarrel. So why doesn't Rebbe speak up and say, well, wait a minute, guys, like, okay, let's calm down. Maybe you shouldn't say this. It's like a little nasty. I've done a little, you know, quiet down. Rishmal, okay, we like you, whatever. Rebbe doesn't intervene in the machlokas. If you're a teacher in a class and two students start quarreling, one might argue that it is the responsibility of the teacher to intervene and to calm things down. Rebbe doesn't do that. He sits back quietly and lets this whole drama unfold. Rav Yosef sees that as a flaw. And he says that Rishmal, he got his due, because Rishmal, in a sense, disrespected Rebbe, because he didn't say he's my Rebbe, he said your Rebbe. He's disrespectful. And he was disrespectful of Rebbe because Rav Yosef believed that Rishmal believed that Rebbe should have intervened. You know, a new person comes into the yeshiva, and the guys are not nice to him. Especially a very heavy person. He's fat. They start bullying. That's not going, it's not bullying here, but I'm just giving an example in contemporary life. You know, so the guys start bullying this new kid who's fat. Well, shouldn't the Rebbe say, hey, don't do that, it's not nice, let's welcome him, let's be nice to him. Where's Rebbe in all this? So Rav Yosef maintains that Rebbe was wrong for not intervening. Now, we can't say that, but the Gemara says that he should have intervened. And now, I think this is linked to who Rebbe was. Rebbe was the master of Mishameis Rebbe Batla Anava. Rebbe's Anava may have been so great that he just stood back and didn't want to intervene. You take care of your grown-ups. I don't want to project myself into your. I'm too much of an Anav. He's thinking. I mean, he's not thinking this, but you know, he wants to. Anav just doesn't want to get force himself into what's going elsewhere. He's too much of an Anav. And so, on this reading, Rebbe being a great Anav, what you have here is something very interesting. You have how appropriate self-esteem can balloon into illegitimate gaiva, right? That was the case of Avdan, Rishmal Riosi appropriate, self-respect, self-esteem, Avdan, it balloons. And you have self-effacement on the part of Rebbe can balloon, if I can continue to use that verb, into negligence. There's the borders here are not so clear. What constitutes legitimate self-respect versus arrogance? Remember, the legitimate self-respect of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi expressed led to a clash with Avdan the arrogance. And as I pointed out, the difference wasn't so great because they were both really sharp to each other. So the difference between arrogance and appropriate self-respect sometimes is not so great. And the difference between appropriate self-effacement and excessive self-effacement may also might not be so great. You see, we have a continuum. And all of these different, the great people involved in this encounter represent different parts of the continuum and the dangers of how close they are one to another. You with me? So I think that's important. Okay, let's continue with the story because it goes on much further. Adahachi Asya Yavama. The Yavama came Lakame Deribi. Remember, the way it worked in those days is somebody had a shayla, the yeshiva was sitting in session, and the person would come with a shayla, and the Talmidim would listen to what the Rebbe had to say, or the Rebbe might ask them what they have to say, and that's learned. It's not like a yeshiva today where like nobody comes in, you know, it would be like coming into a shir with the Rebbe in the Talmidim, and then somebody came in and asked a shayla. That's not the way it works today. Shilas usually asked in private, not in public. But that is how Shilas and learning took place during that time. It's different from today. It took place during the Gaonim as well, during that same model. So somebody came into the Beis Medrash, they're talking and learning, and they have a Shilas. Amalei Rebbe Li Abdon. It's a young, the Christ of a Yibum, and it was a young girl. And now we come to the question of the status of a ketana with respect to Yibum and Chalitza. So, Amalei Rebbe Li Abdon. Rebbe said to Abdon, Puk Budka. Go check to see if she's a gdola or a ketana. If she's a ketana, she can't do Chalitza. That was Rebbe's sheet. Remember the Achlokes Tanaim? Whether a ketana can do Chalitza. So Rebbe is of the opinion thus far that a ketana can't do Chalitza. And therefore, he tells Avdan, for which reason I kind of called him the Gabbai, because he's like the go-to person for Rebbe, although I don't think it was an official title. But he says, Avdan, you know, go check her out and see if she's a gadol or not. Did she bring two Cyrus or not? Labasa de Nafak, after he left, Amalei Rebbe Yishmael. Rebbe Yishmael now speaks up again. Kach Amar Abba. Thus my father said. Ish kasuv parsha aval ish. It says ish in the parsha of Yibum and Chalitza, Aval Isha, Ben Gedola, Ben Ketana, a Ketana can do Chalitza. That's his Diyuk in the Pasuk. There's Tosfos discusses the nature of this Diyuk in Daf Ayin Gimel, I think it is. The Gilyon HaShas brings it down. I don't want to get into it now. It's not relevant to what we're learning. But that's his Limud, and he holds that a Ketana can do Chalitza. Well, what happened to Abdon? He was on a mission to check her out, right? And now, according to Rabbi Yossi, cited by his son, there's no point in checking her out, right? Makes no difference if she's a Tana or a Gedola. Tana can also do Chalitza. Amalei, talot srichat. Come back, we don't need you anymore. Kvar horiz zaken. Zaken. Rabbi Yossi is very paskin, so he is in effect summoning Avdon back. His mission is no longer necessary. Kvar hora zake. So now you see Avdon is really he's kind of gotten knocked in the gut, sent out, and now this new competitor, this new contender, comes in and says, oh, you know, paskin is a shiloh based upon his father's psak. And so all of a sudden he's on a mission, a silly mission, it's no longer necessary. Yes. That's a very good point. And I don't think he was passing. I think he was just citing his father. He wasn't saying his own opinion. He was just informing Rebbe of his... Rebbe Yossi was a great Tanis. Older than Rebbe, significantly
like
older.
Held Rebbe Yossi?
Yes, everybody held
him. So that it wouldn't be like chutzpah if he just said...
No, it would not, because Rabbi Shmuel himself was older than Rebbe. So Rabbi Shmuel's father, Rabbi Yossi, was really a generation or two before. So definitely it wouldn't be... So Avdon is now outside the Beis Medrash. Guys, imagine now this visually. He's out. Got to come back in. Everybody's seated. No room. You get it? See what's going to happen? Kamifsa Avdon Viyasi. Avdon started stepping all over the people and coming into the Beis Medrash. So he accused Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi of arrogance and stepping over the Beis Medrash, and now with the guy over the Talmidim in the Beis Medrash. Now he himself is put into, and he does it. He says, "I'm superior. I can do it." Amalei Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi. Now, you know, the dagger comes out, and he says, "Mishet sarach lo am kadosh yivsal rashi am kadosh." Somebody who is needed, this is a brisa elsewhere, so this is a, Tysus talks about it too, this is a teaching. Somebody who is needed by the Am Kadosh can step all over the Am Kadosh. Somebody who is not needed by the Am Kadosh can't step all over the Am Kadosh. So, Misha tzarek lo Am Kadosh, yesar rashi Am Kadosh. Misha ain't tzarek lo Am Kadosh, heich yevsar rashi Am Kadosh. Who needs you? We don't need you here. You were sent on a mission. Your mission was voided. Who needs you here? Who gives you the right to step all over everybody in the base matters? Brilliant repartee, right? It's just so powerful. Exactly what happened before. And now the roles are reversed. And the Rishmal accuses him of doing what he was accused. Amalei Rebbe, the Avdan, kom bedochtech. Rebbe tells Avdan, stay where you are. Rebbe sides with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosef. So, this is what does kumbeduchtek mean? So it means literally stay in your place. Might it have metaphoric meaning, figurative meaning? If you tell somebody, that's where you belong, what you're saying is, you belong out there. Avdan, you're not in the inner circle as you thought you were. You thought you were the big chief honcho. Stay outside. We don't need you so much, Avdan. You're not so important. Rebbe is deflating Avdan's ego. He is saying that he is an outsider, and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, is an insider. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi informs Rebbe. He's Rebbe's Rebbe. Right? He teaches Rebbe what Rebbe didn't know. Rebbe thought that a ketana cannot be choletzes. When he heard that Rabbi Yossi holds ketana can be choletzes, Rebbe changed his mind. So what the message here is, or one crucial message here is, when it comes to the Beis Medrash, all that matters is Torah. No kavod, no big shots. If you know, you're in. Avdan, you're on the outs because you didn't really know the halacha and I sent you somewhere, and you know, big shot that you step on everybody else. Rebbe's ultimate teaching is beduchtach. The place of a Beis Medrash is Torah study. The place of Torah study is the Beis Medrash. Kavod, honor, they have no place in the Beis Medrash. And Avdan, you're no longer needed, so you remain on the outside. I think that's one of the central messages of this Agadata. When you think about welcoming new Talmidim into the Beis Medrash, the Beis Medrash is about learning. That's all it's about. No hierarchy, social structures that are extraneous to Talmud Torah. And Avdan's attitude, his self-regard, was extraneous to the fundamental enterprise of Talmud Torah. And that attitude is kumba dachta, remains outside. That's not a part of the Beis Medrash. Then I'll take just one point. What is the Hebrew word for heavy? Kaved. Kavod and kaved are etymologically related. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was kaved, but he had true kavod. He had true kavod in the Beis Medrash because he had Torah knowledge. He was a Talmud Chacham. He was a Talmud of his father, the great Rabbi Yossi. So kavod and kvedus, kvedut, are linked in that they are both about the person's Torah presence and contribution to the Beis Medrash. Avdan was a lightweight, literally. He kind of zipped in and out, got by, good shape, ran, did errands, but he didn't have the kvedut, the gravitas, the dignity, the knowledge that Rishmal Rabbi Yossi had. Avdan was not Sorech Lam, because he couldn't contribute to the learning in the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosei may have been heavy. That gave him gravitas. He belonged in the heart of the Beis Medrash. Could be poseya al Rosh Hayam, because he was and had what the Beis Medrash is about. The Beis Medrash is about learning. When it comes to welcoming new guys in the Beis Medrash, it's all about, let's open up the Gemara and learn together. That's what it's all about. Yes, Asi? Excuse me?
At this point, Calvin is walking past people. That's why Rabbi Shmuel
Like, yes, exactly. Yeah.
So he's already inside the Beis Midrash.
Yes, he's already in the Beis Midrash. Absolutely.
So he's not asking him to get out.
No, Rebbe's saying to Avdon, Kum B'Duchta, you stay outside.
No, Avdon's already in.
No, he is not all the way. Maybe he started but didn't get all the way back to his seat. And he's stay. There. Stay. And those don't go to where you were before. Don't step on people.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We need to move ahead because it's really quite late. So let me have some other thoughts, but I will just kind of move down to the end of the story. We'll continue. Tana Biosa Shah, at that moment, Nitztareya Avdon. Avdon contracted Saras. You ready? V'tav u'shnei bonav, his two sons drowned in the sea. U'me'ash nu shtei kalosav, and his two sons were engaged to two young girls, but they were sort of engaged. You know what miyun is? You know what that is? What is that? Yes, a father can marry off a young girl to another person, but she has the right to refuse that marriage. It's called miyun. It's not quite a get. So his two sons were engaged, so to speak, to these two girls, but they refused to consummate the marriage, and they ended up drowning in the sea. A pretty dire end to Avdon. Saras, sons die, and what's the significance of Miyun? That means his sons could not enter into Yibum, who are married, so they are completely cut off, and Avdon is completely ne'evad. Avdon, he becomes completely lost. No descendants, sons never married, sons killed. Pretty horrible end to Avdon's life. Now, presumably his sons didn't deserve to die for some reason, but you ever think about, you might want to think about why his daughters-in-law, prospective daughters-in-law, were miyun. So you two sons, two cases of miyun. Probably tells you something about the marriageability of Avdon's two sons. Maybe Avdon, who comes across as pretty arrogant, raised some sons who weren't going to make the best husbands, and these two young girls said, by the way, there's another Gemara, I can't remember where it is, but I saw it, which describes what the girls said, and they just said horrible things about these two guys. Like, this is the ultimate peros of Avdon Ar Kumba Duchtach, stay outside, you're not in the Beis Medrash, you get mitzaras, your kids die, they're unmarriageable, nobody wants to marry them because they kind of absorb some of the superficial, perhaps this is my hypothesis, arrogance of Avdon, and nobody would want to marry them because they don't. Who want to marry creeps like that? Just too arrogant and superficial. So it kind of goes down from generation to generation, and that is how this ended. I have more to say about how it's Mita connected Mita. The Aruch Haner discusses this. Marsha, I don't have time for that. I just want to ask you the following question by way of conclusion. Are you troubled by the end of this story?
Yeah.
What? You are?
Yeah.
Why?
It's sad.
Sad?
Severe.
What? It's very extreme. Severe. What?
It seems extreme.
Seems extreme. I mean, Avdon may not have been a world-class Anav, but to have this happen to him? It seems like an awfully dire end to somebody who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda, of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. I mean, it's something. The overall thrust of the Agadita portrays Avdon in an extraordinarily negative light, right? Avdon, he got a nickname. The Agadita calls him Avdon. He becomes Ne'evad. Nothing left to him. Is that not excessively harsh? It's very late, so let me just conclude. Now, should we be troubled by that? Are we allowed to ask that question about the Gemara? Are we allowed to ask the question, doesn't that seem really harsh, or should we just kind of like keep on going? So, I'll leave it to you to ponder that question, but I will tell you that the Gemara itself seems to raise that question. Let's continue with the last line of the Agadita. Amar of Nachum by Yisak, now this is an Amora, so this is the story itself is over. This is an Amoraic coda, conclusion to the Agadita. Amar Nachum by Yisak, Brich Rachmana de Kaspe La'avdan Bahai Alma. Blessed be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who shamed Avdan in this world. Since he's shamed in this world, what happens to him in Olam Haba?
Kapara.
It's a kapara. Exactly correct. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that Avdan got all of the onshin he deserved in this world, and in Olam Haba he comes as a Talmud of Rebbe. And so, kam beduchteich means in this world, you are a... Where does the Betzorah stay? Mechutz l'machana, exactly where Avdan remains. Kum beduchteich, mechutz l'machana. He never comes back into the base medrash. But in the overall cosmic vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, over the long sweep of the universe, Avdan finds his place. He is, if the word is avad or ne'evad, he is lost, he is found, the opposite, in Olam Haba. And Avdan finds, if he is lost in this world, Avdan, who was a Talmud of Rebbe, who had many good qualities, found his place in the world to come, in Olam Haba, which is to say that this Agadah leaves us with a much more complicated picture than we first thought. Avdan is portrayed as a villain. Right? He's the villain. Mitzorah becomes Tzoras. Kids die. Mion. Out of the Beis Medrash. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak insists on reading a more complicated version of Avdan. That whatever happened to him in this world, he has his place in the world to come. And Avdan had good qualities as well. Arrogance, humility, self-effacement. The borders of all of these are somewhat complicated. And the Gemara insists on leaving us with a much more complex attitude towards human beings and their motive. Avdan eventually found his place in Olam HaBa.